RadioInfluence.com.
Well, here we go. Welcome back to another edition of our little digital movie show. We've seen that. It's movies from the 80s, 90s, and more. I'm TJ Reeves. I'm based here in West Central Florida. He is my man, the famous Jay, based in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And we're feeling nostalgic once again. We're going back to a great series of movies. We're going to pluck from a great series of movies today here on We've Seen That, Jay Betzel. Are you ready to have some fun and talk about John Grisham and the Pelican Brief? How you doing?
Good. I'm excited about this. You know, John Grisham has sold over 275 million copies of his books worldwide.
Yeah.
And, you know, I believe he is into the 30s as far as the amount of books he's written. But let's go back and revisit his third book. His first book he wrote was A Time to Kill.
Yep.
Second one was The Firm. The third, The Pelican Brief. And he wrote it specifically with the star in mind when he was doing it. Let's go talk about The Pelican Brief.
From the best-selling thriller by John Grisham, author of The Firm and The Client. From Alan J. Pakula, director of All the President's Men and Presumed Innocent. The Supreme Court of the United States, the ultimate symbol of law and order. But in a single night, two of its justices will be brutally assassinated.
Everyone is assuming that the motive is hatred or revenge. What if the issue involved old-fashioned material greed?
1,000 miles away in New Orleans, a lone law student has pieced together who did the killings and why.
Your girlfriend has a theory?
She's a brilliant student with a passion for constitutional law.
Her conclusions are detailed in a document known in the corridors of power as the Pelican Brief.
Miss Shaw, you take my breath away.
Now, she has become a target. And the only person she can trust is an investigative journalist.
Everyone I've told about the brief is dead.
I'll take my chances.
Julia Roberts. Denzel Washington.
If this thing reaches as deep and goes as high as we think it does, these men will do anything not to be exposed.
Pelican Brief.
There we have Warner Brothers' release of The Pelican Brief. It came out December 17th, 1993. Domestically, it grossed $100 million on the nose, $100,768,000 to be exact. Worldwide, $195 million. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, it did very well, and it was in and around the time of Julia Roberts and Denzel Washington's careers taking off, and the Grisham novels that you referenced being made into movies. So you had stars, and you had really what is one of the biggest ingredients, two or three ingredients, is stars and a great story, a thrilling mystery in and around lawyers. And interesting that so many of Grisham's books are centered around Memphis, and you know that's my hometown. I was born and raised early on in my childhood in Memphis, Tennessee. This one not in Memphis, though. This one centered more around New Orleans and Tulane's law school and Washington, D.C., Jay Betzel.
Right, and you know, it's funny you mentioned the ingredients. Obviously, two of the biggest movie stars in the world. But the awareness of the book and the story, so many people when they heard it was being made into a movie. And this came out in December of 93. That previous July of 93, we had The Firm. And then the following summer, we had The Client. So this was kind of sandwiched in between a couple of the Grisham movies. And Grisham himself was a rock star at that time. And let's kind of like just touch on the box office for a second. Julia Roberts, adjusted for ticket price inflation, The Pelican Brief was her sixth biggest hit of all time. So adjusted for ticket prices, today's numbers, $224 million. Mm. Number one, Pretty Woman. Two, okay. Ocean's 11. Three, Runaway Bride. Number four, Hook, starring Robin Williams, Dustin Hoffman. Number five, My Best Friend's Wedding.
Ah, yes.
So all these other ones you think of, Julia Roberts, Conspiracy Theory, Stepmom, Ocean's 12, Steel Magnolias, Notting Hill, Sleep with the Enemy, beat them all. And her Oscar-winning role, Aaron Brockovich, beat it too.
Well, and chick flicks, a lot of those, although some, I mean, Sleeping with the Enemy was around this time, also with The Firm, and that's obviously a thriller, and Hook is more in and around Captain Hook and the Disney kind of theme, but this one, a serious, dramatic role for Julia Roberts. Not so much the fun roles that you kind of know her for, like in the Ocean's series of movies, Ocean's 11, 12, 13, things like that, or My Best Friend's Wedding, which I think you and I are going to end up doing that one probably at some point just by extension, because my wife has seen that on We've Seen That probably 500 times, and so it's on in my house on over-the-air cable, regular cable, and one of the 17 HBOs and Cinemaxes all the time, My Best Friend's Wedding. But yeah, this one more of a serious thriller mystery around law firms, and in this case, Supreme Court justices, and it really clicked. It clicked at the box office. I remember seeing this one in the theater. It was dramatic stuff on what was going to happen with Darby and whether or not she was going to survive or not, and whether or not Greg Grantham was going to survive, or were the bad guys going to get to both of them before the story got out.
I agree. It was definitely an awesome movie. And on the box office side of Denzel Washington, adjusted for ticket price inflation, where do you think this one sits amongst all of his biggest movies?
Now, he's had, obviously, some great ones, you know, again, across the board from Training Day, and I'm a huge Denzel fan, you know this.
Huge, great actor.
Movies like Training Day and Remember the Titans and on and on down.
Crimson Tide, huge.
Yes, we got to do it. We've seen that on he and Gene Hackman on the submarine. I will say this was top five for him. Did he get in the top five on Pelican Brief?
Adjusted for ticket price inflation, we have number five, Philadelphia. Number four, American Gangster. Number three, Crimson Tide. Mm-hmm. Number two, Remember the Titans. Mm-hmm. Number one, Pelican Brief.
Boom.
$224 million. It by $26 million in adjusted gross, it beat Remember the Titans. So just kind of give people an idea, you know, this movie was made in 93, but this was a big deal. Not just John Grisham, Julia Roberts, Denzel Washington. Let's hit some more of the cast, shall we?
Please.
We also have, let's kind of go down just the list. We had Sam Shepard. He played Thomas Callahan. And you know, he was kind of reunited because he was with Julia Roberts because they start together in Steel Magnolias.
Right.
And a little spoiler alert here, ironically, Steel Magnolias, remember there's the part where he dressed up to go to the funeral of Julia Roberts, who died from diabetes.
Right,
and
in the movie.
And flip that around, Pelican Brief, Julia Roberts does not go to his funeral, but she does tell her friend to pass the word around that she's gone because he died in the car bombing.
Well, she's very scared that she's going to get blown up herself. And of course, the time that we're doing this now in the fall of 2018, Sam Shepard has gone ahead and passed on. This was one of his memorable roles that you remember him for as the law professor here that kind of sets the whole conspiracy about the deaths of the two Supreme Court justices into motion with this. So, yes, he's a well-known character actor for some other films. But, yeah, he's prominent, obviously, at the beginning until, how should we say it, Jay, things go boom for Thomas
exactly.
Callahan.
Exactly. He said that she took his breath away and he didn't know he meant literally. But, you know, obviously he's kind of the tie that binds this whole thing together because he was her law professor, but they're also having an affair. And so they were laying in bed together when they found out the death of Justice Rosenberg and Jensen. And Justice Rosenberg was his mentor, father figure, which led, you know, Julia Roberts' character, Darby Shaw, to do the investigation into who could possibly have committed these acts. So moving on in the cast, we have John Hurd, who played Gavin Verheek, special counsel to the FBI.
Right.
A director of Voiles. And you mentioned the passing of Sam Shepard. 6 days before Sam Shepard passed away, John Hurd passed away.
Yeah, how about that? Another cast.
That was last was July of 2017.
Yeah, how about that? And he's another well-known character actor as well.
Right. We know him from Home Alone. I mean, many, many movies, but a lot of people are going to remember him played the dad in Home Alone. And this one, as I said, he played the special counsel to F. Denton Voiles, who is the FBI director. And he's in all of John Grisham's – or many of John Grisham's novels, sorry. And he was played in The Firm by Stephen Hill, who we know from Law & Order. He was played in The Pelican Brief by James B. Sicking.
And I was a big Hill Street Blues fan. And we're going to tie this to Denzel Washington and the 80s TV career of Denzel Washington. Did you ever? It was probably a little before your time. Hill Street Blues, Stephen Bochco, cop series set around New York. And I can never, never, ever get James B. Sicking playing a hunter, Commander Hunter, as the SWAT commander, who was very eccentric and always said and did weird things, out of my head. And then you see him playing a serious role like this as Director Voiles in The Pelican Brief. So, yeah, I'm big on the character actors. Keep going down your list on who else is in this.
James B. Sicking, I just want to kind of mention, I do think he's an amazing actor. And here's a funny one. What I know him from, the first thing I saw him in was The Electric Horseman with Robert Redford, Jane Fonda. Yeah. He was one of the corporate PR guys, and for whatever reason, he stood out to me from that. So moving on, we have Tony Goldwyn, who we knew from Ghost back then, the huge hit Ghost, playing Fletcher Cole, who is just pure evil. And now, ironically, he is on ABC show Scandal playing the president.
Right. He was the chief of staff, and you see him in that. And yeah, it's kind of the same thing where he's kind of the underhanded guy that you didn't see coming in Ghost. Spoiler alert on that. And now he's kind of the underhanded chief of staff to the president, who's played by Robert Culp, by the way. And I'm going back to 80s TV. And again, it's we've seen that whether you have found the show through Radio Influence or you're subscribing now on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. We talk constantly about movies from the 80s and the 90s on this show. But again, we talk about Hill Street Blues, the television show of the 80s, or in Robert Culp's case, The Greatest American Hero. He's from that show that's kind of an action comedy sitcom situation from the 80s, and Robert Culp ends up playing the president here.
Yeah, and John Grisham's idea of the president in this one is just an idiot who plays with his dog in the office. It's really, right. Fletcher Cole is the chief of staff. He's the brains behind all this, and you mentioned Robert Culp was on Greatest American Hero, I believe, before both of our times. Wasn't he an I Spy?
He was an I Spy. Now, were you Greatest American Hero before your time again? Because you're a little younger than I am. But that was a highly successful show for about 3 or 4 years. William Cott was the Greatest American Hero, the Superman-like hero with Robert Culp in that. Am I correct? I'm going off the top of my head. Wasn't Connie Selica the female that was involved in that? And everybody was hot after her. But you know that show did very well. And then it's like Culp disappeared for a little while, and then suddenly, boom, there he is as the president in The Pelican Brief, is my point.
Yeah, I do remember the song from The Greatest American Hero, which I believe was in a lot of the Aaron Rodgers State Farm ads.
Very true.
Kind of had a little rebirth. Moving on to the character, the CIA director, Bob Gominski, played by William Atherton, yep, we know from Ghostbusters Die Hard.
That's right. He's in both
of
those.
Some people remember him as Dr. Hathaway in Real Genius, starring Val Kilmer, which was essentially playing the same character he did in Die Hard and Ghostbusters, but he mastered that part. And it's funny, he plays against type. He's actually a good guy in The Pelican Brief when he's the head of the CIA, essentially saves Darby's life on a couple occasions.
Yeah, very, very well a little bit later on. Now, what about the villain? Let's talk about the villain in this.
Well, there's many, many villains, don't get me wrong, but one of the biggest villains is the assassin Kamel, played by Stanley Tucci.
Yes. And Stanley Tucci, a very interesting actor from Broadway and also television. Did you ever get into in the 90s, right after this, he was part of the launch, again, Stephen Bochco, of the Murder One television series that was on ABC that lived in the mid-90s for about 3 or 4 years. He was on the initial season, which that was the number one show on TV for at least a year or more. And
wasn't
Tucci,
that following the OJ trial,
right,
or something?
And Tucci was like essentially to that, and he had come off of playing Kamel here, the assassin in The Pelican Brief. What about, and I've seen him in other things too, where he's kind of like the lovable goofy guy in a couple of things, like
Nigel, remember, in The Devil Wears Prada.
Right,
like the nice guy to
and he's in another hilarious spoof movie. Well, I say hilarious, but it's definitely a spoof movie, silly, in Jury Duty. He's one of the jurors, and I'll go ahead and spoiler alert there, because he turns out to be the killer. He's trying to kill Pauly Shore through the the whole end of the movie with his little dog. So you have Stanley Tucci at one end of the spectrum being goofy guy in a couple of different aspects, but then also being a known foreign assassin here. Did he pull it off well? What do you think?
I thought they did a great job. And part of his bit is he can do voices.
Right.
He does five or six different voices. And just real quick, I want to mention recently, a lot of people are going to recognize him because he's been some huge commercial hits. He was in like Captain America, the First Avenger. He's in a bunch of the Hunger Games movies. He was in the Transformers Age of Extinction. So he's definitely well known. But this is one of the first things I remember seeing him as the assassin Kamel. We also have obviously a vital character, Justice Rosenberg, played by Hume Cronin, familiar mm-hmm. with his work.
Yes, who was an actor for many, many years, and obviously at this time period was at the end of his career. But he's perfect as the aging Justice here who gets taken out by the assassin in the Pelican Brief.
Right, and I know him from Cocoon.
Right.
And I believe he was married to Jessica Tandy, who was in Driving Miss Daisy.
That's correct, yes.
And then lastly, let's hit John Lithgow, who plays the editor of the Washington Herald, Smith Keene. And we've seen John Lithgow play some crazy characters in Ricochet starring Denzel Washington or Raising Kane. We've seen him play some kind of, tightly wound characters, if you will. We've seen him play like nice guys, like in Terms of Endearment. But in this one, he's kind of just like the voice of reason in a lot of cases. So Smith Keene played by John Lithgow. What do you think about him?
He is the editor of the Washington Herald here, who Denzel Washington is trying to chase this story and the great conspiracy and what happened to these Supreme Court justices. And he is not only the voice of reason, but he's also like the standard of journalism here. I'm not going to let you just put anything in my newspaper. And it's so funny, because for decades, again, we're in my line of work, your line of work as well, but for decades, you couldn't just put anything in the paper or on the internet or on the air, et cetera, because you had an editor like Smith Keene standing in the way to keep you from doing it. You had standards, you had regulations, you could get sued, you had integrity about, that what you're reporting is the truth and that you were able to verify it. So it is interesting how that part goes round and round in the journalism aspect of he is constantly on Greg Grantham of you've got to be able to prove this. You've got to be able to demonstrate that Darby Shaw actually exists, the brief actually exists, and that there is this actual connection before we print this, because Matisse, who is the guy behind it, is going to sue the daylights out of them and end up owning the newspaper with the law firm if they're not right. And that's what the editor's job is, Jay. And you've dealt with editors
all the time. I went to TCU. We've talked about that before. And I spent tens of thousands of dollars taking journalism classes. And one of the things they tell you is you have to have multiple sources. And that's definitely where he was having problems explaining to his editor. But also, at the same time, his editor had his doubts and was talking about sending him to Arkansas. So he was having to kind of battle with his editor. Like, no, I don't want to go to Arkansas. I need to stay in this because this is huge.
And isn't the nod there? It's interesting because they were filming this, again, with the movie out in 1993, The Pelican Brief. They were filming this at the time of the rise of the Clintons and Bill Clinton becoming president of the United States in November of 92 when the Clinton campaign was going on. I think that's an absolute nod from Grisham, because he wants Grantham to go cover the presidential campaign and the president in Arkansas, or the fictitious, go cover that campaign or go cover that story in Arkansas. I believe that was a nod. I don't have this, but I believe that was a nod to the whole Clinton rise to prominence in political worldwide politics back in the early 1990s.
It could have been a subtle nod. And I'm not going to say yay or nay. It's hard to say because, a lot of Denzel's character was an investigative journalist. So if he was going to Arkansas, it probably had something to do with maybe one of the potential new justices. Lastly, in the cast, she wasn't a big deal when the movie came out, but she ended up being a huge deal based on HBO series Sex and the City. We had Cynthia Nixon as Julia Roberts' friend down at Tulane, played Alice Stark.
Yes.
You a Cynthia Nixon fan?
Well, Cynthia Nixon and Sex and the City was on my TV all the time in the 90s and the 2000s. Again, I defer to Mrs. Reeves on this with Sarah Jessica Parker. What was it? Kim Cattrall from Police Academy. She struck it big on this show. Kristen Davis was the other female, and they had the long-running TV series on HBO, and then they later made movies out of it. And so many more people would know Cynthia Nixon as the redhead from Sex and the City, but she's actually in a couple of scenes in this movie. And now, interesting, I kind of went back and forth with you a little bit before we taped this show that Cynthia Nixon actually 20 plus years later delves into politics and ends up trying to get the Democratic nomination for governor in the state of New York before losing the primary in September of 2018. So what do you think about that? She not only was an actress, but she's moved on from the acting career, but she's now gone into public service and politics. Cynthia Nixon.
My, how times have changed from 1993 when this movie came out to now, where a lot of the celebrities and the politics world, it's almost like politics and entertainment all kind of combined sometimes.
Yeah, because you've got Tony Goldwyn playing the president in Scandal on the ABC TV series, the weeknight drama, the weekly drama. And then you got Cynthia Nixon actually trying to be the governor or trying to be into politics. So it's fascinating with all this around the cast. But clearly, to get back to them, the two stars of this that make the movie, they're in the movie the most, are Denzel and Julia Roberts.
And I want to hit one real quick. The director and writer, Alan J. Pakula, he made famously All the President's Men, 1976, with Dustin Hoffman and Robert Redford. And one of the big deals they made when this movie was being released at the theaters from the director of All the President's Men, you know, another movie set in Washington, D.C. He had also made Clute back in the early 70s with Donald Sutherland and Jane Fonda. She won an Oscar for that, I believe. And The Parallax View with Warren Beatty. And a lot of that was kind of revolving around political paranoia. And then, obviously, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that he made one of our very favorite movies, and the reason we're friends, 1990's Presumed Innocent, starring Harrison Ford.
Oh, yeah. We love that one. Well,
That will be a future episode.
You're going to have a future. We've seen that on Presumed Innocent. We might have to do All the President's Men at some point, because we've just crossed at this time another anniversary of 45 years since the Nixon administration went bye-bye on the basis of the report. Here we go again, journalism of Woodward and Bernstein and the making of that movie. And you and I constantly talk about that movie, have to call each other when that movie is on. We've seen that, as we say from time to time on this show. We're just kind of doing the show that we normally do off the air, on the phone, etc., or on Skype or whatever. We're now doing it officially for the audience here on We've Seen That. But yeah, whenever All the President's Men is on, we have to call each other. Presumed Innocent is on, we have to call each other. Pelican Brief hasn't quite risen to that level yet, but we still wanted to do
it
this
might after
show.
This one, but yeah. No doubt, when Sandy Stern is in the courtroom and dissecting the witnesses on the stand, if it's on one of the pay cable channels, the odds are pretty good one or both of us has it on.
Well, there's something, and I'm just drawn to this, and my mother's probably going to listen to this at some point, and she would be the first one to tell you this. She wanted me to be a lawyer long ago because I can argue with the best of them and try to reason it out and talk.
But I'll go ahead and co-sign that.
Law dramas seem to draw me in, and that's what this is, because you've got the murdering of these Supreme Court justices. You've got a law professor that basically assigns what happened here to one of his students, Julia Roberts as Darby, and Darby comes up with the connection. She does the research and she finds a connection that even Jay Betzel, the FBI, had not come up with, that this is why both of these guys were suddenly murdered, was the connection that the Supreme Court case involving the oil drilling in Louisiana was going to be coming to the Supreme Court in a couple of years, and that the president was going to get to appoint his own Supreme Court justices to basically rig that case. It is the conspiracy of the highest order involving the legal world. Jay, that's the premise of the movie.
Right. And let's kind of just do a quick look at the plot, because a lot of it's funny that a lot of people don't remember, but Julia Roberts and Denzel Washington don't even appear on screen until like an hour and 10 minutes into the movie, because they're kind of on a collision course with each other.
You mean together? Right.
Yeah, together. Exactly. In the same scene. Because it starts out with Denzel Washington, the reporter Greg Grantham for the Washington Herald, speaking with Justice Rosenberg. And Rosenberg obviously has the utmost confidence in him to be in the room with him by himself talking. You know, so that kind of vouches in a way that you see that Greg Grantham knows what he's doing, you know, and he's got some serious credibility. Then you cut down to New Orleans, where you've got Thomas Callahan, who's obviously medical problem. He's a Tulane law professor. He's having an affair with a student, Darby Shaw. Obviously, she's trying to get him to be sober, which incidentally saves her life, because she's trying to take the keys from him and he tells her to walk because he's going to drive. And, you know, ends up getting in the car that explodes. And why does that car explode? Because she had done this, basically taken a week off from their relationship and spent time in the library. done all of this research and found out the kind of connection between Justice Rosenberg, who was killed at his home, and Justice Jensen, who was killed in a porno club, the main thing that they had in common was the love for the environment.
That's right.
Put two and two together and figured out that there was this gentleman down in the Louisiana area named Victor Matisse, who had donated upwards of $4 million to the president's campaign. So indirectly, she implicates the White House in this little briefer theory. So Thomas Callahan takes this theory, gives it to his friend Gavin Verheek, who's special counsel to the director of the FBI. It gets passed around Washington, D.C., and the way you know the brief is right on the money is they try to kill her, and they end up killing Callahan. So she's on the run, you know, and obviously Fletcher Cole, the chief of staff, you know, he talks to the president. He lets him know what's going on, and he lets him know the direct tie based off Victor Matisse. And then this is kind of where things – you kind of wonder if anything like this would ever really happen in real life, and actually probably how often it happens – is the president asked the director of the FBI to back off the brief because of how bad it would look to the press.
Well, and right, of course, because he realizes that I'm in deep doo-doo here because Matisse has donated big time to my campaign. He's a friend of mine. He's a donor, and he may be behind these two deaths, and you need to stop investigating this because it's eventually going to connect back to me, and my presidency is going to be over with. That's essentially what Fletcher Cole, the chief of staff, is basically saying to him, let me handle it. You don't need to be involved because this is bad. And he even says to him, remember in the limo ride, you don't want to know. You don't want to know what's going to have to happen here to keep this covered up, because it eventually is going to connect back to the president.
When in the novel, Fletcher Cole and the president try to cover themselves of any get rid of any tracks to Victor Matisse, and the FBI even sends an agent down to talk to Matisse, and Matisse kills him. Like, Matisse himself never appears in the movie, but in the novel, there's, you know, which you've got a little more room because you can print as many pages as you want. You know, Cole is even shadier than he is in the movie. So kind of keep that in the back of your mind. But yeah, going forward, we have Darby, who's put two and two together. And at the same time, we have a gentleman known as Garcia, who has been calling Gray Grantham saying he works, you know, at a law firm. He doesn't tell him which one, but Gray Grantham, by virtue of his journalistic skills, figures out, you know, is it right. Part of Wyden Blazevich.
Well, she eventually helps him with that. He just knows that he's a lawyer. And we're bringing in our own life experiences here. And this is always the fascinating part, because I had just at this time graduated from college. I got a journalism degree and I end up going into broadcasting, etc. But this is so many times how you are able to break stories is someone gives you a tip. Someone that trusts that you know what you're doing, you're good on the air, you're a good writer, you're a good investigative reporter, gives you a tip. And so Garcia, the character, has seen a memo which basically links his law firm to Matisse and to the Supreme Court justice murders, and he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know who to trust. It's a lot like Darby. He doesn't want to go to the police, so he wants to go to the media. He wants to go to somebody that can help him break the story and get it out there so that the police will arrest the people that are involved and bring the people down. And it's just interesting that it's a journalist. It's not really in a lot of other Grisham novels. What do you think about this, Jay? Famous Jay. It's not a lawyer that is central to solving this. It's actually a journalist, a newspaper investigative reporter that is the central figure for both Darby and for Garcia to tie the whole conspiracy together.
Well, a lot of the Grisham novels, the lawyers are the bad guys. You know, in the firm, they represent the mob. You know, the Maralto family from Chicago. And the client, you've got Reverend Roy Fultrick, played by Tommy Lee Jones, who's just got his political aspirations. You know, and obviously in The Rainmaker, starring Matt Damon and a slew of others, you know, his dealing with John Voight, who's a complete sellout. So, no, for sure, a lot of his movies and a lot of his novels, the lawyers are not the good guys. But in this particular case, this lawyer that has contacted Denzel Washington's character, Gray Grantham, he's got a conscience and he's got a family. And it turns out, you know, through their research and the help of Julia Roberts, they figure out who he is, that his name's Curtis Morgan. And then, of course, she finds out that he was killed and it was claimed as a mugging. So she knows, and obviously Gray Grantham knows, that they killed him.
And they're covering their tracks, trying to get rid of anybody and everybody that would know something about this. And, you know, it's interesting about how she hooked up with Greg Grantham in the Washington Herald. It goes back to Callahan, the law professor at Tulane, Sam Shepard's character, where he trusted Grantham and actually had talked to him previously. He had clerked for Rosenberg. And she says, Darby Shaw says to him, Callahan was a fan. That's why I contacted
Remember,
you.
They're watching him on TV because he's on NBC.
Right, right.
And he's talking about it. And at one point, Sam Shepard's character, Thomas Callahan, says, I like that Grantham. He's a man after my own heart.
Right.
So that's kind of like the tie.
The clue.
And it kind of it's almost like it's the foreshadowing, but it also kind of tells Darby that, you know, hey, this is one of us, you know. And so that's the reason she calls him. And that's the link that kind of puts them together. Kind of like I said, the whole thing with Thomas Callahan is the almost like the centerpiece of the story that kind of ties everything together.
No doubt here. So as this movie progresses, let's talk about, again, Denzel and Julia Roberts. And Julia Roberts had been in a couple of significant movies. Again, Denzel was on the very popular 1980s adult drama St. Elsewhere, centered around a hospital in Boston, Massachusetts. As Dr. Chandler, a surgeon, that's our first introduction on a regular basis to Denzel each week on that show. And so now you have him in this role playing the lawyer, and he's with Julia Roberts. What about the two of them together as kind of a tag team trying to figure this thing out? I mean, it is obviously the crux of the movie, isn't it? It's what makes a movie work.
Yeah, and we'll get to this in a little while when we hit some of the trivia nuggets, but a fun fact about this is the character of Greg Grantham in the novel was white. So that's definitely an addendum. You know, pretty much every one of John Grisham's movies or novels, when they're brought to the screen, they change stuff. Like The Firm, they blatantly change the ending.
Right.
And this one, they kind of changed the ending a tad, but not quite as obvious as The Firm. But that's one thing that, you know,
the character was white in the book. He's black in the movie, and his name is Gray. Right in the middle.
Correct.
Bravo.
Correct.
Bravo to Grisham for the Pelican Brief. Very nice. Yeah.
Well, and you talked about for Denzel Washington, this movie was sandwiched between Philadelphia and Crimson Tide. He had a nice little run going there. Philadelphia, which of course won Tom Hanks his first Oscar in 93, you know, and then this was also 93, Crimson Tide 95. So he had a good little run there. And right before Philadelphia, had Malcolm X.
I keep making reference, and he's tremendous in Malcolm X too. I mean, you could go on and on about Denzel's roles like The Hurricane and on. But I keep making references to 80s television shows, and you remain silent on the other end. So I take it again, you've never seen an episode of St. Elsewhere, the hospital drama from the 1980s?
I have seen a couple of episodes of St. Elsewhere, and the funny part is, as we mentioned kind of me going to TCU earlier, I saw an episode of St. Elsewhere in one of my classes at TCU when we were talking about hospital TV shows, and we watched an episode of ER.
There you go.
So Chicago Hope, and watched a little bit of St. Elsewhere.
There you go. And St. Elsewhere, again, a much bigger deal in the 80s. It was a very successful number one rated drama that gave you not only Denzel Washington, eventually Howie Mandel, who was a comedian, but actually was a really good actor as the emergency room doctor. He would actually tie his St. Elsewhere character into his comedic act in the 1980s and start quoting all kinds of medical things to try to prove to everybody you can't trust your doctor because listen to me, I sound like a doctor. And he starts going over all the stuff in his comedy routine. And you know him now from America's Got Talent and Deal or No Deal, the game shows and the TV shows. So Howie Mandel on that show. Who else on that show?
Ed Begley Jr.,
right? But William Daniels, who was the surgeon, Dr. Craig, who was the voice of the car on Knight Rider from the 1980s with David Hasselhoff. Who else? I mean, they were all on St. Elsewhere.
Stephen First from Animal House.
From Animal House as Axelrod on St. Elsewhere. So again,
one of my favorite movies ever, Up the Creek, which no one's ever heard of.
Right, but Alfre Woodard also on St. Elsewhere. Ronnie Cox from the Beverly Hills Cops movies on St. Elsewhere. You mentioned Ed Begley. Big time cast always on St. Elsewhere, and Denzel then transitioned off of that show. David Morse too as Boomer, Dr. Morrison, a great character actor, also big on St. Elsewhere. So again, I was a huge fan obviously of that show growing up, and now you got Denzel on the big screen here as part of the Pelican Brief, and it really works with Ian Jr.
What I want to mention too, that St. Elsewhere ended in 1988. And then he won an Oscar in 1989 for Glory. So he was best supporting actor. So, I mean, he had quite the transition from TV to Oscar winner.
And you mentioned Philadelphia, which was obviously a huge mega hit. And around the time that Hanks won, back-to-back Oscars for that and Castaway, Forrest Gump in and around that time, Apollo 13, and Denzel latched on there with Philadelphia in a great role, too. So what a great time period in the early 1980s. All right. So I didn't mean to sidetrack you here because the plot line
major sidebar there. But back to the movie.
Right, the plot line,
yeah. Involves St. Elsewhere at all, in case anyone was concerned St. Elsewhere involved.
Yes, Dr. Craig does not end up being part of the conspiracy.
Or White and Blazevich has nothing to do with St. Elsewhere.
That's exactly right.
But anyway, so Darby visits the White and Blazevich, the law firm, to say that she has an appointment with this with Garcia, quote unquote, who they discovered is Curtis Morgan. And that's how she finds out that he'd been killed. And as she leaves the office, she goes past the villain that we see at the end that Denzel will call. So that's kind of one of our first introductions, you know, kind of putting two and two together and saying, hey, not only are they onto him, but they're really onto him. So then, much as what happened with Thomas Callahan's car when she and Denzel Washington are in the car, you know, he tries to start the car and it's not starting. It's making the same noise. So she realizes that they put a car bomb and they're trying to kill both of them. So after a crazy movie style chase through a parking garage where they get shot at and almost run over, jumping down levels and everything. Smith Keene, the editor at the Washington Herald, is in his office and he has one of the reporters come in and say that there was a car explosion to a car rented by Gray Grantham. So immediately Smith Keene is like, I should have taken him off that story.
Right.
I knew something was wrong. And then he sees Julia Roberts and Denzel Washington just looking like they just got finished working on, you know, changing the oil of the car, walking through the inner sanctum of the Washington
And obviously
Herald.
That's the big dramatic moment because he has made it safely into the newspaper with her. And this is the first verification, really, besides him knowing about her, of who she is, that she actually exists. And she's going to be able to connect all the dots on the conspiracy with her Pelican brief. Because remember, very famously, when Denzel's being sent to the cabin and being told you're off the story, Lithgow's character, and I can't get Third Rock from the Sun out of my head, speaking of 90s sitcoms with Lithgow playing that goofy role, but he's such a good serious role here as the editor, and he's saying to her, you know, hey, you know, this Darby Shaw, if she exists, she's cut off all contact with you. Your source, Garcia, has cut off all contact with you. Cutting off all contact with you has become a bad habit with you. Nobody's talking to you anymore. I want you off the story. So there's just this belief, is my point, that they don't know that she exists, that Darby is an actual person, and she wants her anonymity kept because she's afraid she's going to get killed. So until the scene that you're talking about, when they actually show up at the newspaper, you know, greasy, dirty, they almost got blown up in a car bomb, that's the first time that it finally hits home. She exists, and this is for real. The Pelican Brief was written by her, and there is a grand conspiracy to kill these justices, and Gray Grantham can prove it, Jay Betzel.
Right, and we had alluded earlier that this is from the director of All the President's Men with Woodward and Bernstein, and their source was Deep Throat. And a lot of people think Deep Throat might not have existed, that it was kind of a combination of a lot of their people they've talked to. And so they talk in this movie, you know, a couple times at length, they kind of compare Darby to a potential Deep Throat that
right.
Maybe Grantham is finding this stuff out from people he can't mention. So he created her as the source. And so I agree that this is definitely, it's one of those moments in the movie where, you know, things are going to be okay. You kind of have that feeling because, you know, unlike now where newspapers are dying and have no power, back then the newspapers, they knew what was up, for lack of a better way to put it. You know, they had plenty of power. And so not only just for example, the amount of power they have, Gray Grantham is able to get F. Denton Voyle's director of FBI on the phone with not very much problem and let him know, we are running this story. Would you like to comment? And within a few minutes, the FBI director and his assistant are walking into the newspaper.
And you see everybody.
And everybody stops. And so, I mean, it's one of those moments that's so cool because anybody who likes media stuff and is interested in this kind of stuff, that's one of those things where you see the power and the good that the media can do and not the scumbags that we have, you know, here in the modern day. today with the blogs and just, you know, rewriting journalism and stuff like that. You know, these guys, they were there for the good, and it was just power. And it was really cool and to see them be able to get the FBI to come and act on what they're doing. And so going forward, he gets there, and then this is F. Denton Voyles. This is his introduction to Darby Shaw as well.
Well, and they have such an important role, journalists, men, women everywhere, investigative journalists and reporting. And I'm drawn again to the job that they're able to do in tying it all together. And yeah, you mentioned All the President's Men. We've now lived long enough, as I mentioned, more than 40 years beyond the Watergate conspiracy and what happened. And of course, Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein swore that they would take to their graves who their sources were, unless the sources wanted to say who they were. And it was actually someone that was working, I believe, formerly in the White House that was blowing the whistle, and he outed himself right before his own death at a very, very old age. He had told his family privately, "I was deep throat for Woodward and Bernstein. I'm the one that tipped Bob Woodward off to what was going on." And then eventually he gave Bob Woodward permission to unveil him publicly. And then they talked about that in a news special. They interviewed him, et cetera, about why he wanted to come forward and admit who he was and was actually the source. So that's very rare in journalism that you will have that reveal. You will have the actual reveal in real life. Here, as the viewer, as the fan in the movie, we're sitting back and we know Darby Shaw exists, but the belief is that it's a lot like Deep Throat and the Watergate conspiracy. Does that person actually exist? And that's why, again, it makes it so much better at the end when you see the relief look on John Lithgow's face as the editor, as Smith Keen. They're alive, and oh, double. She is actually a real person, and she's in here, and she wrote the brief.
And, you know, not only that, obviously this is a complicated movie with plenty of twists and turns. So we've skipped over a lot of things. But part of them finding out Curtis Morgan and going to the bank and getting through into his safe deposit box is they have the tape that he made before he passed away, before he was murdered.
Right, right. The verification.
Where he filmed himself is like a deposition, basically saying, "Here's what happened. If you see this, I've passed away. Please take care of my wife and my kids. I love my family," you know, yada, yada for your Seinfeld fans there. And so not only do they have that, that's confirmation of whatever Darby said. And, you know, so now they know that Matisse has ordered the assassination of the justices. And with all this evidence, Greg Grantham writes his story. And he, you know, and he also works with the director of the FBI to get Darby on a plane safe, and she ends up
remember the line,
it's kind of what now
the pilot has to fly a file a flight plan, remember the line,
flight plan.
You're the director of the FBI. I love that.
and you assume it's somewhere like on a nice Caribbean island, because it cuts to the NBC show that he's on, where they basically talk about how two partners of White and Blazevich have been indicted. And you've got the Fletcher Cole resigning. The president's probably not going to seek re-election. And then, you know, the question is, you know, where is Darby Shaw, and, you know, who is she? And because it sounds like she's almost good to be true, you know, and then Denzel Washington smiles and says she almost is.
Well, right, because again, the belief is that just like Deep Throat with Watergate, did he make it up? Or not. So, you know, that's the implication there. The direct question,
too,
actually.
Let's, you know, rewind for just a second. Part of this is that, you know, we want to make sure she's safe. If he just goes on national TV and says, "Yeah, she's living in the Caribbean, everything's good," you know, just because Matisse is in jail or whatever, just because they've been indicted doesn't mean they still can't get to her. They killed two Supreme Court justices. You know what I mean? So I want to mention real quick, you know, I kind of threw out earlier that they kind of tinkered with the ending of the book a little bit. What happens in the book is the story appears prominently in the Washington Post, which is the newspaper Greg Grantham writes for in the book, over the objections of the president, who tried to get him not to run the story.
Of course.
One of the White and Blazevich lawyers kills himself in the book. The president is expected to lose his bid for reelection. He does not say he's not going to run again. Victor Matisse, who obviously appears plenty of times in the book because he kills one of the FBI agents, he disappears. No one knows where he is.
How about that?
So, and Darby is settled on an island, and then at the end to the book, she is joined by Mr. Greg Grantham, who agrees to stay for at least a month.
Yes.
So that's how the book ends, in case you were curious.
How about that? Well, and of course, again, it all ties back to the conspiracy of follow the money. Matisse is trying to essentially pay off the president and pay off whoever he can to get the right Supreme Court justices picked so that he can make multi millions, if not billions, on the oil and that part of it. I know what I was going to say, too. The actual interview is with Edwin Newman, which, again, the actual news reporter from NBC that used to host a lot of their different programs. Again, in the present day, nobody knows that name, but he was a figure in the 70s and the 80s on TV. So it's interesting that it becomes official on the screen, because that's actual news reporter Edwin Newman playing himself interviewing Greg Grantham.
Let me just interrupt you for just a second. So I talked about taking journalism at TCU. I had a really cool professor, John Miller. I had him for like 7 classes. He was tough, but I learned so much from him. And one of the things he talked about was when I came, was kind of the very end of all this, but was the national news anchor. And you know how NBC forever had Tom Brokaw.
Right.
ABC had Peter Jennings. CBS had Dan Rather. And how they were, you know, faces that you learned to trust. Because a lot of people would have the evening news on while they were sitting around the dinner table.
Well, let's relate it even more, because when you go back to the 70s, the 60s and the 70s, Walter Cronkite was the institution on CBS. John Chancellor was the guy with David Brinkley on NBC, and ABC was kind of up and coming. But you're exactly right. You would have dinner around the TV and around the news in the 60s and the 70s and maybe even into the 80s, because people can't fathom this now, Jay. There was no internet. There was barely cable TV in the 80s, but there was no internet to find out the news. So in terms of the national news outside of your community and where you lived, these guys on NBC, CBS, and ABC, they were bringing you the national news at 6:30 Eastern Time, 5:30 Central Time. Adjust your time zone accordingly. Right around dinner time, they would bring you the national news. So it's just fascinating to watch that.
The future, November 12th, 1955, when they got their first TV set, when they had Marty McFly over for dinner, you know, and they pulled the TV up and had the family at the table. You know, I mean, I don't know. Obviously, you have a wife and kids. I'm not married or anything, but I don't know how many families even eat dinner together anymore. It seems like everybody's constantly on the run, updating their Instagram and, you know, and
on their phone, on their whatever. Nobody sits around. But yes, to find out the news of the day, you had, my point is, to your professor's point, these guys were icons, because they were bringing you the national news every night into your home that you didn't know and couldn't find anywhere else, except maybe on the radio. There was no internet, so this was a very big deal. So it just kind of ties back into what we're talking about, a different time in journalism. I guess it's the seal of approval that Grisham and the filmmaker give here in this instance, to have Edwin Newman sitting there at the end. You know,
certainly adds some legitimacy to Greg Grantham that Edwin Newman has him on.
Yes, and is saying to him, you know, you're just like Woodward and Bernstein here with Watergate, and you've broken it wide open with the story, and it just seems like Darby Shaw is almost too good to be true, Jay Betzel.
She almost is. Kind of like Julia Roberts back in the day. Now that we've essentially told the entire story of this really, really fun movie, let's hit some of the fun little trivia facts about it.
And I got to confess, confess that normally we do this back and forth. We don't rehearse this show for those that are finding us on. We've seen that again, whether you found us through Radio Influence or, again, subscribe to us as well. Subscribe to this show, rank the show, rate the show, and tell others about it, whether you found it on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play. So typically, you and I go back and forth with trivia nuggets. I purposely, in this instance, did not look up trivia nuggets, because I want you to hit me with things that I probably don't know, just like the audience. So fire away, Commander.
Okay, this one doesn't have as many trivia things as some of the ones we do, but here's just – I'm going to start out with a fun fact. One of the movies that we've discussed that we're definitely going to do in the future is Dave, starring Kevin Klein.
Right.
And for the scenes inside the White House of Pelican Brief, they used the same set that was created for Dave.
Interesting.
Also a Warner Brothers film. That's one.
The Oval Office is the same Oval Office, and
kind
of like
the exact same one, the one where Kevin Klein fires Frank Langella. that is the same exact.
Well, why
set.
Not?
So that's pretty cool.
Why not take advantage of it? Sure.
Okay, here's another fun fact. I don't know how much this is going to actually be trivia. A lot of it's really more facts, but the rights to the Pelican Brief were bought before the book was even written. John Grisham just released a sample and the movie rights were purchased on the spot.
Well, that's because of the success of The Firm and the success, obviously, of the books, right? So I don't.
Well, this was. Yeah, I remember this movie came out shortly after The Firm.
How about
Firm,
that?
The book was huge way before the movie. You know, it was a big, big deal. So.
All right, give me some more.
Another fun fact, John Grisham wrote the part of Darby Shaw with Julia Roberts in mind. I mentioned that earlier. When Roberts read the book, she agreed to do it before they even wrote the script.
Now, come on, that's give me a little more. You got to give me a little more than that. What had he seen her in? What did he see? Did he see her in, like, Mystic Pizza or what else? Flatliners around that time? Well, what did he see her in writing
time,
it for her?
At the time, for Julia Roberts, all we had was Steel Magnolias, Pretty Woman,
Mystic Pizza was one of her first. Flatliners. Remember, Flatliners is where the medical students with Kiefer Sutherland and Kevin Bacon, and they're doing experiments with life and death on themselves, on bringing themselves back to life.
Correct. Flatliners came out actually, you know, like 2 or 3 months after Pretty Woman. So that was her perfect timing. She was also in Dying Young.
Right.
And then that's it. I mean, this was really
but
early.
I never heard that. He wrote the part with her in mind, basically trying to
probably off of Pretty Woman and Steel Magnolias. I'm gonna go out on a limb there and just throw that in because those were her two big. She got an Oscar nomination for Steel Magnolias. So this is one of three movies that feature Julia Roberts and Sam Shepard. I mentioned Steel Magnolias. Do you know the other one?
I do not. You got me.
2013. Also starring Meryl Streep, August Osage County, filmed in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
There we go. All right. Good trivia nuggets here about the Pelican Brief. Keep going.
This is a fun one. Julia Roberts won the Best Actress for Aaron Brockovich in 2000.
Yep.
The following year, she presented the Best Actor Oscar, which went to Denzel for Training Day. How cool is that?
And she went crazy up on the stage. It's a very memorable moment from the Academy Awards, getting to give him the honor and hugging on him and the whole thing, because he had been denied, right, a couple of times with the Hurricane and a couple of other ones.
He already won for Glory.
He had won for Glory, but he had been denied as Best Actor a couple of other times when others thought maybe he should have gotten it. So she got to give him the award, as it turned out. A fascinating touch. And it's one of those moments, speaking of conspiracies, where it makes you think, well, wait a minute, they knew well in advance that she was going to give him the award. They wanted that memorable TV moment, so that's why they have her presenting, because they were together, Jay Betzel, in the Pelican Brief.
So kaboom. That is essentially most of the fun facts that I have from Pelican Brief.
All right.
So do you have anything you want to throw at me?
I love all of these Grisham movies. We'll probably get to a couple of more on We've Seen That. But yeah, I love the Greg Grantham character. We mentioned Edwin Newman is makes the cameo as the news guy on a couple of different occasions. And we should make mention, too, at the time that we're taping this, for some of our audience that's hearing us. Now, if you're hearing it much later, but if you're hearing us in the fall of 2018, that we've just gone through the whole Supreme Court nomination process controversially. With Brett Kavanaugh being named to the United States Supreme Court right before we taped this podcast. And again, this movie, the theme, the plot is central to being able to pick Supreme Court justices and have them essentially be given the blessing by the United States Senate and go through as Supreme Court justices. That's the whole premise of the movie, being able to pick the people that you want at the time you want to be on the Supreme Court. So it's interesting that real life in the present day 2018, when we're making this episode of We've Seen That, kind of intersects what the whole plot line reason for offing the Supreme Court justices was in the first place here.
Right. Because, I mean, you know, obviously flipping back to the movie for a second, you know, Matisse gave so much money to the president in the Pelican Brief that his goal was to get some Supreme Court justices nominated and passed through that were not environmentalists, so that all of his business and ventures, you know, wouldn't have any problems. And that's just, I'm not saying that has anything to do with the current times, but I'm saying that, you know, just the whole Supreme Court justice talk, there's a lot of that in the novel, a lot more in the novel than in the movie. But it's definitely one of those things that, you know, kind of makes you think.
Well, and again, corruption is a central part of what Grisham is always in. You mentioned the mafia as part of The Firm, or the corruption of the lawyers representing the insurance company and the client. And here you've got a law firm that's corrupt, that's been investigating or that's been protecting Matisse while he's trying to get the Supreme Court justices on his side, the forward thinking of this. So it's definitely central to the plot line here. Corruption and the law and the Supreme Supreme Court are all part of this. I just think this one is fascinating because most of his other works that turn into the movies are centered in and around the great state of Tennessee. In this one, it's centered more around New Orleans and more around Washington, D.C. and the landmarks that we see all throughout.
No, I agree. A lot of his stuff is set in the South. And, you know, one of his books that I really enjoyed was Skipping Christmas. You know, they had the husband and wife, their daughter was off, like, well, I believe she's working like with the Peace Corps, something like that. And so they were going to literally blow off Christmas and go on a vacation to the beach, you know, and everybody in the neighborhood is putting up Christmas lights and their one house is just sitting there. I really enjoyed the book. I thought it was pretty funny. They made it into a movie. It was called Christmas with the Cranks with Tim Allen and Jamie Lee Curtis. I thought the movie was pretty average, but if you want a book to read, and it's pretty short, it's not even 200 pages, that's a fun one to read, and it's kind of outside of his realm of a lot of his stuff is kind of with law. And, you know, I'd mentioned earlier the original novel he wrote was A Time to Kill, and it took him 4 years to write that. And that was the fourth movie they did. And by the time they did it, they cast Matthew McConaughey as the main character, Jake Brigance. And he, at the time, really no one knew who he was other than people seen Dazed and Confused. So they really stacked the rest of the cast. They put Sandra Bullock and Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin Spacey at the time, obviously not the pariah he is now. You know, at the time, he was a well-respected actor. We've got just tons of people in that movie. Kiefer Sutherland.
Right.
You know, Oliver Platt. So, I mean, you know, there was a nice little run where John Grisham, I mentioned earlier how much he sold, but he was a rock star. You put his name on a movie, and you had the A-list people in Hollywood wanting to be in it, judged by Tom Cruise, Julia Roberts, Tommy Lee Jones coming, you know, right on the heels of winning the Oscar for The Fugitive. You know, Susan Sarandon getting nominated for an Oscar for The Client. You also had The Chamber. Remember that one? Chris O'Donnell and Gene Hackman.
Yes.
You had The Runaway Jury, Dustin Hoffman and Gene Hackman, John Cusack. I mean, we're talking about a major player here. But, you know, kind of wrapping up the Pelican Brief Talks, I know we've kind of gone on and on about it, and hopefully everyone has enjoyed us kind of revisiting this. But back when it first came out, I want to mention a couple of the critics, what they thought. Janet Maslin of the New York Times, Big Apple.
Thumbs up or thumbs down?
She wrote in her review, "The Pelican Brief is best watched as a celebration of liquid brown eyes and serious star quality thanks to the casting of Miss Roberts and Denzel Washington's leading roles. Neither of these first-rate actors is shown to great dramatic advantage, but they do a lot to make this movie shine." So it sounds like she was looking at it as entertaining.
Right.
Roger Ebert, who we remember from Siskel and Ebert, he gave it 3 stars. And he sounds like he really enjoyed it. He kind of mentions, he alludes to Raymond Chandler and Elmore Leonard, some of the, you know, more famous authors of our time, maybe a tad before our time with Raymond Chandler. But he so gave it 3 stars, and he says it's about as good as The Firm, but in a different way. While The Firm was a muscular thriller with action sequences, The Pelican Brief takes place more quietly in corners, shadows, and secret hotel rooms. True, it has a few bomb explosions and chases, but by Grisham standards, it's claustrophobic. So anyways, he goes on and on, which you can find his full review, RogerEbert.com. And like I said, he gave it 3 stars, and you got to remember, too, just back when this came out, it was Warner Brothers' big Christmas movie. It had big movie stars, and it's a fun movie.
It's a tremendous movie. We have much love for both Julia Roberts, Denzel Washington, for John Grisham. And again, he's got all these movies set all over the South because, you know, I was thinking this, A Time to Kill set in Mississippi. You mentioned Runaway Jury set in New Orleans. This one also set with New Orleans and Washington, D.C. It's outstanding, and it obviously continued the success in the 90s and then into the 2000s of both of these actors. All right, so did we pretty much cover all of it on The Pelican Brief? How did we do?
I think so, unless there's something you can think of that I missed.
I think that we're all good. Just when in doubt and there's some kind of conspiracy, especially in the legal world and on the big screen, follow the money. Follow the money and the money that got contributed to the president that led to the whole conspiracy on picking new Supreme Court justices and led to the Pelican Brief being written into a great movie with Julia Roberts, Denzel Washington, John Lithgow, and all the others that are involved. In it. Again, we encourage the fans, stay in contact with us on We've Seen That on Twitter and as well on Facebook and Instagram. Famous Jay, I know you always love getting feedback from the audience as well on your own Twitter handle. Plug away. Go ahead.
Well, you can talk to me on the Famous Jay. And I know a lot of times when we're doing our show, I'll casually just allude to, oh, we're definitely going to be doing that one. I am taking notes. I've got a list of future ones we've done, but that doesn't mean that we won't do something if there's something you all would like to talk to us about.
Okay.
So if there's a particular movie you'd like to hear me and TJ ramble about, feel free to suggest to me at the Famous J, him at Buck Sideline Guy, or our just regular handle on Facebook or Twitter. We've seen that.
Yep. So we'd love to hear from you for the feedback. The suggestion box is open on these. Or maybe you got some comments about the jobs of both Denzel Washington and Julia Roberts in this one, in The Pelican Brief, a tremendous dramatic movie. And again, it's on all the time on over-the-air cable, on regular cable. And also, you'll see it from time to time appearing on, again, the pay channels as well. It's worth the $2 on Netflix. We assume a lot of the time that you've already seen it. But
right now, as we are taping this episode, the movie is on Cinemax Go. So if you want to go on demand on Cinemax, I literally watched it yesterday. So
there you go.
It is available to watch. And I know you mentioned this earlier about us being on iTunes and Stitcher and everything, but please, please leave us some ratings and reviews on iTunes, because that'll help more people discover us.
And make sure you share the show out when you see us on social media, because more will do this. And again, we're diverse here on We've Seen That, because we're going to cross over back and forth. You've already heard us doing Caddyshack. We do a serious movie like this. When we get to Christmas time, we'll have things like Die Hard or Christmas Vacation, sports movies, whether it be White Men Can't Jump, Days of Thunder with Tom Cruise and Cars. So we try to go as diverse as we can. Football with Any Given Sunday, The Fugitive. I was watching The Fugitive earlier today, and one of my 10-year-old twin girls came in and said, "Daddy, what is Han Solo doing in The Fugitive?" And I said, a little later on in life, you're going to learn he's not just Han Solo. He's also Dr. Richard Kimball in The Fugitive as well. So I'm just saying to the audience, find our catalog of shows as we go along here and tell others about it. Like you're saying, rate the show, promote it within iTunes, with Stitcher. Others will find it. Share it out on social media, and others will find it, because we want more and more people. And give us some critiques about how we're doing, if we left something out on the reviews, if we missed something, we were wrong about something, you disagree about something, hit us up on We've Seen That on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, or on The Famous J. With his Twitter as well. Hit us up and tell us about what you think about the show. We love
it. And I don't want to hear if I'm wrong, but if TJ's wrong, you can definitely let TJ know. I'll even go one step further, because before we spoke about doing this one, we were going back and forth about what to do, about whether to do The Firm, whether to do The Client. I will let the people listening, if you want to tell us which John Grisham one you'd like to hear us do next, we'll do The Firm, The Rainmaker, any of those.
Look, we got to do The Firm no matter what. It's a matter of which one we want to do next, but we're doing The Firm at some point. Yes.
But The Client, there's a lot of other John Grishams. If you enjoyed us talking about The Pelican Brief, let us know which one you want to hear us do next.
Love it. All right, so there we go. We're going to go out with the music from the theme here to Pelican Brief, the dramatic music always. Remember, they're running around trying to keep from getting killed by the bad guys, getting blown up in a car, and eventually they're able to prove the grand conspiracy here of the Supreme Court Justice murders with the Pelican Brief. Famous Jay, I had a blast, as always, sir. Great job.
TJ, have a great day.
You too, as well. And to the audience, do the same. Find us again. If you just found the show on Radio Influence, subscribe. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, on their TuneIn channel as well. You can find this show. Subscribe to this show. It comes automatically to your device when we have a new episode that comes out and debuts through Radio Influence. It is We've Seen That on social media. For the Famous Jay, I'm just TJ. Thanks for being with us as we talked about The Pelican Brief here on this episode of We've Seen That.
This is a Jim Fannin Show quick fix on Radio Influence.
Stress restricts blood vessels, capillaries. What does that do? Well, now I have poor circulation. Well, that impacts organs. Negative energy not expressed doesn't go into the organs, but it does go into the muscles. And of course, if they're tense, that impacts blood vessels, which in turn impacts organs, circulation, getting rid of waste in a regular fashion, better night's sleep. So there's many studies and a lot of research on how relaxation is something that we need as human beings. And these blue zones that they're called, where people are living to 100 years old, these people are cool. They don't get upset. They don't get stressed out. And they eat better. They sleep better. They live longer. Hello, sign me up, please. I'm in. 125. That should be all of our goals. 125 years. Why not? Why with technology the way it is, you know, we can live longer, but obviously I don't want to be hooked up to a tube to get an extra 10 years. I want to be active. I want to be living. I want to be vibrant. I want to go, you know, to a blues club. I want to walk. So relaxation is really one of the things as humans we need to focus on.
The Jim Fannin Show can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.